Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. When I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. John Turner, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hi, Fran, and I'm excited about our guest tonight. You know, Dr. Turner is a skilled neurosurgeon, but also somebody that discovered the spiritual world, and he's fascinating to listen to, so we're going to have a great show.
He also wears really cool Hawaiian shirts.
Well, you live in Hawaii, you have to. It's the law. Did you, I know you did because you watched it with me. There was a show on last night.
Beyond Seeing.
Beyond Seeing or Beyond Belief or something. Maybe Beyond,
something like that.
Beyond Belief. And the premise sounded good.
I get it confused with Debbie Morton's book, which happens to be an excellent book, Believe Beyond Seeing.
Right.
So it's got all of those elements in there.
I was disappointed. I had high anticipation, you know, for that, because the series is going to delve into various different kind of phenomena, things that are considered to be paranormal. But at least in the first show, it was on last night. It was on twin tuition, a term that was coined by, you know, two psychics. But they were investigating the phenomena of twins being able to communicate telepathically, and we've all heard, you know, stories about that. But my disappointment came from they really didn't do a good job in presenting evidence that would convince one. I mean,
I don't think that that's what they set out to do.
Well, listen, if I didn't believe in any of this stuff, you know, if I didn't believe in telepathy, and I thought I didn't believe in survival of consciousness, and I thought it was all a bunch of woo-woo stuff, I'd come away from what I saw last night without changing my belief at all. Matter of fact, it would be reinforcing it. It was a lot of anecdotal stuff, and then
right, but you see that time and again. I mean, look how many times TV show hosts have psychics and mediums on, and they don't believe them. So their whole orientation around having them on the show is trying to disprove what they do.
Yeah, and the focus and the thing that they promoted for the show were two twins. I think they live out in California, they were doing readings for several people, one including the show producer. And I heard stuff that I hear a million times.
But they were psychics.
Yeah, they were psychics, yes, but they were psychics. And they said, the thing that really bothered me is they said to the woman, not the show producer, but another woman, oh, I sense that, you know, some sadness that, you know, you lost somebody. Who did you lose? Okay, so that's...
And right away she tells them.
And she told them. Unfortunately, you know, she has her son had passed away. But, you know, that's not what, you know, a professional medium certainly would do.
Well, again, these were psychics and not mediums. And I will go a step further, because in watching the show, my gut sense was that they weren't even legitimate psychics. I mean, we're all psychics, and we can all do what they profess to do. But they did a pretty lousy job of it. And considering that they were twins and you had them both there at the same time, writing notes that they could both look at, that they were both talking at this woman at the same time, and then lo and behold, when they compare their notes at the end, they're exactly the same.
Yeah.
Why not?
I know.
You know,
a lot of the telltale, you know, the oh, I sense that you're going to be taking a trip. Oh, really?
You know, particularly since she's a journalist.
Yeah, she travels all around the world, and I sense that.
It was typical cold reading.
Yeah,
what we
you'd like to write a book.
About.
You'd like to write a book. Well, yeah, she's a journalist. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she would like to write a book. You know, so that kind of stuff drives me crazy. You know, but I
think the other examples of the quote unquote twin tuition or intuition between two people who have been connected in the womb were excellent. The tennis players who rose to the top because they seem to have some sort of they don't talk to each other while they're playing. They have some sort of a non-verbal communication that takes place that allows them to move across that field and to catch every single ball.
Yeah, well, I didn't buy that. I mean, they've been playing together since they're 6 years old, and now they're in their, late 20s or, I don't know exactly how old they are, and they've been playing 6 to 8 hours a day, every day.
They were not playing together. They were not playing together. They split. They played as individual tennis competitions until about 4 years ago. Then they joined together.
It's more than 4 years ago, but they always practiced together and they hung out together. They were living together.
Yeah, but look at these other doubles tennis teams. They don't play as well.
Well, listen, my point is, there are many, many cases, and I've read a lot of them, of extraordinary things, not only among, twins, but siblings, where one senses, that there's something good or very bad happening to the other one, and it could be in different parts of the country. And that, I just didn't think they did a very, very, good job at exploring that. Now, they did have a scientist who conducted an experiment, which they mentioned that it had significant results, but they didn't get into it too much. But I thought it was also a little bit of a sloppy science there. The stimulus that he was using. They had one twin that was isolated and from the other, and they would have some sort of a stimulus to one twin, while the other twin in a totally different location was wired up to all different types of machines that were monitoring changes and biological changes. But you have to be consistent in the stimulus. One was like busting a balloon. If you're going to...
They all got the same stimulus.
Yeah, but there's slight changes. Like if you're going to... One was throwing dishes on the floor. It's going to make a different sound every time you do it. So, I mean, that may be nitpicking, but I...
Yeah, it's nitpicking.
But I didn't think that...
Nitpicking, Bob.
Yeah, well, I don't...
I agree with you. They didn't do a good job. And they also went to this scientist while he was doing these things, and it was his first experiment that he was doing on this stuff, so there was no replication yet. But still, his results were pretty significant.
Yeah, they had one thing with children where one they were playing and one suffered an eye injury and had a very bad black eye and a cut, and they looked at the other twin who was not involved in any activity, and her eye started discoloring,
Right, as if she had a black eye just like her sister.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
There's lots of interesting stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it does merit funding and experimentation and...
Yeah, well, when these things come on the air, I hope that they do a very good job because it's so important, because...
Well, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. And if you're going to go with your run-of-the-mill... Talking Heads, which the woman who was who will be the narrator on this show, the way I understand it, on the whole series,
She's
already, a recognized journalist, and it's not like she has a personal interest in this, or that who's ever producing it has a personal interest in this. They're just jumping on the bandwagon of everybody's into this psychic stuff, so let's make a psychic show.
Well, we'll see. They're going to have a lot of different episodes. I think next week is studying some sort of healing, and maybe they'll have something on survival. We'll see. With that, I guess it's time to go to our break because I'm anxious to get to our guests. So stay with us. When we come back, we're going to have Dr. John Turner.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HGH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. John Turner. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. John Turner served as the first neurosurgeon on the Big Island of Hawaii, where he performed many life-saving procedures despite, some would say, substandard equipment and little trained help. Despite his classic Western medical training, Dr. Turner embarked upon a professional and personal exploration of the metaphysical. He eventually began incorporating non-traditional healing techniques into his medical practice and surgeries, which broadened the scope of the recovery for his patients. In addition to literally holding people's lives in his hands as he operated on their brains, Dr. Turner came to realize that one's consciousness survives physical death. His book, Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations, is a 20-year story of his contributions to neurosurgery and the pathways and evidence that led him to the spiritual world. Nice to have you back with us, Dr. Turner.
Well, thank you, Bob and Francie. It's my pleasure to be here once again.
You know, there are many medical doctors, neurosurgeons, people who are skilled enough to hold people's lives in their hands as they operate on their brains, but precious few of them, from what I can see, you know, also combine that skill with a recognition that there are other forces at work and that they're open to that possibility. Besides, you know, the traditional medical knowledge, at what point did you become open to metaphysical disciplines?
It happened the first night I was on call as a neurosurgeon here in Hilo, Hawaii. And it just so happened that there was a tugboat strike, Bob, and all the instruments I had handpicked from the catalog and the medical group that offered me the job was paid this in advance for the hospital. All the modern tools were stuck on a barge somewhere. And that first night I got the call, a young boy who had flown off a motorcycle headfirst into a guy wire that had split his helmet and put him in a coma. When he came to the emergency room, the pupil was blown on one side. By that I mean fully dilated, meaning that the chance there was a blood clot on that side was probably 80 or 90%. There was no CAT scanner here for me to use for the first 2 years, and I can't fault the hospital for that because without having a neurosurgeon, they were not going to be granted a certificate of need to get the scanner. So all these things had to develop once I came. But here I was that night without any tools, just a hand drill and a small bone biter. But that one case, although I couldn't save that young boy's life, taught me a lot because it appears that he visited me in a dream. And that visitation led to the family agreeing to stop the respirator and let him move on as I had felt he was completely brain dead. So it started the first day, and I can't say it stopped yet. I think, fortunately, being in Hawaii allowed me to be exposed to these things that many doctors aren't able to do. And a year ago when we talked on May 14th, I mean 2 years ago, 2009, can you believe that?
No, I
perhaps,
can't.
Yeah, if you had asked me, Dr. Turner, does the brain produce our consciousness? I think at that point I may have said, well, you know, yes, that's what we're taught, because once the brain stops, that's it. But in the next 2 years, meeting people like I mentioned earlier, Dr. Swanson, I've been in touch with people like Amit Goswami, I've had the fortunate chance to correspond with Sir Roger Penrose, I mean. People of this stature have talked to me about consciousness, and I've come to realize that it's the other way around, that consciousness produces the brain. And one way to put it is that our brains keep things so that we can go through these learning experiences without everything melting into strange shapes and getting out of hand, because as we talked about on the first show, everything is energy. It's all a manifestation of atoms in motion and nucleus spinning and electrons and all that. But I've come to realize that it's no longer important, you know, what's real and what's not real and what's a dream and what's not a dream. The only important thing is, what are we learning? You know, what lessons are we accomplishing here? And we came to accomplish these lessons. Nothing else is really important. And the lessons come at every turn, and that's the way it works. So that's the change I've been through as far as consciousness is concerned.
Yeah, and a lot of today's physicists are sounding very spiritual, you know, when they talk about consciousness being the ground of all being instead of, you know, the instead of matter. But I want to go back. You mentioned, you know, the patient very early on in Hawaii who came to you, you know, in a dream. And many of our listeners are familiar with dream visits where apparently, discarnate entities are able to enter your, you know, consciousness and communicate. Now, in this case, you know, that your patient was on a respirator. He was still alive when he came to you in the dream. So I guess you would sort of say that some people are straddling, you know, two different realms. Is that the way you think of it?
Yeah, well, here's what happened. He was completely comatose, respirator dependent, meaning he couldn't initiate a breath on his own. The machine took control and kept control. He was unable to trigger the machine by making an attempt to breathe. Both his pupils were dilated, and he had no movement of his extremities, and by all criteria. Otherwise, he was brain dead, considered. So the family, when I suggested, you know, stopping the respirator, that the chance of him ever surviving this was zero, they just didn't know what to do. They had never discussed this, and they didn't know what this young man who was in his 20s would think about that. So a couple of nights later, he's still on the respirator in the ICU. The dream visitation was this. I had this vivid dream that I was making rounds with a nurse in the ICU, and as we approached his bed and looked at him, a tear came out of his left eye duct. Then he took a breath, and the machine beeped. He had triggered the respirator. So that woke me up. I made a quick phone call to see if that dream was true, and unfortunately, the nurse said, "No, doctor, I'm afraid he's the same condition." I was very disappointed, Bob and Francie. I thought, well, gee, what does this mean? I'm so sorry about that. So I went to the hospital, and I told the nurse who was in the dream, was on duty that day, and I told her about the dream. And as we went to see the boy, the most amazing thing happened. A tear came out of his left eye. And right in front of us, he triggered the machine. It was just like the dream was reenacted. What I did then, I changed the settings on the machine to let him build up more carbon dioxide, hoping he would start triggering the machine. But over the next couple of days, he never triggered it again. So I talked with the family, and I explained what happened. I told them about the dream and so forth. And this time, after a brief discussion, they said, "Dr. Turner, we're going to follow your suggestion and let him go. We'll agree to stopping the respirator." And I said, "All right, then what I'll do, I'll be disconnecting the machine, and in about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you'll see his heart rate will go flatline, and that will be it." It was funny, my sister was visiting me then, and she's quite a spiritual person, but she's kind of opinionated person too. She said, "Just what are you going to tell the family to expect?" You know, I said, "Well, I'm going to go in there and explain to them that within a half hour, the heart will stop, and that will be it." She said, "Do you think you could tell them that it may take 3 days?" I said, "No, it's not going to take 3 days. It's going to take a half hour." And that's what happened. You know, I ran a rhythm strip just to show her that in a half hour, that's what happened. Well, the key thing about this is I was asked to make an appointment to see the boy's father. He traveled from the mainland to talk to me. And as we talked, he said, "I understand my son visited you before." And I said, "No, I met him that night." He said, "No, I mean your dream." I said, "Well, sir, I'm afraid that that dream was not a prophetic dream. It did not come true, I'm sorry to say." So he said, "No, that's not the point." He said, the reason I came here to talk to you, doctor, he said, "You have big things to do for Hawaii and Hilo, and I want you to understand how the Hawaiians think. We think that his contacting you was a way of getting you to let him go. He needed to move on, but he was kept here by that machine." I said, "Well, that's something to think about." He said, "Well, please think carefully." Mm. Well, years went by, Bob. The book, my little book, was published, and then Robert Moss asked me to do a radio show on medical dreaming. He asked me to tell the story I've just told. And then he said, "Well, Dr. Turner, perhaps you knew or you didn't know that the Hawaiian word for this eye duct is called the soul pit," and he told me the Hawaiian word. He said, "They believe that this is the way the soul exits the body, through the tear duct."
Wow.
That explained everything, why the family made that sudden change, because they knew that that meant he had left.
Hmm.
So it's a very interesting story, and that was my first night on call, and that was the beginning of things.
That's quite a first night. Would you mind, I know there's some people lining up to listeners that would like to speak with you. Can you mind taking a call?
Oh, no, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Okay, we have Ernie on line 3.
Ernie?
Turner, Brother Jack, and everyone. My question would be, Dr. Turner and I, we know each other pretty well, and we talk a lot about what you have talked about in the past in a show about 2 years ago, which I had listened to, which is, I believe, love or unconditional love.
Right.
And my question is, we kind of know, I think for the most part, most people have a sense of what that is, be it through intuition, their experience, their experiences in life. You were talking about the twins earlier. I had twins. Which I found was interesting, but I guess my question would be is, Okay, so we all kind of understand the premise of unconditional love through whatever religion or whatever experience we have in life. So how do we implement it? I mean, not to be the Dalai Lama or to be Jesus Christ, but how do we take what we know by listening to shows like yours and engaging in whatever church we go to or engaging in life in the way we do? I just see so many people understand it. I kind of wonder how, I think that next step is how can people better understand how to implement that, you know, even in small steps as, you know, they take their journey through this, you know, their life or their life's experiences as they know it. That would be my question.
Yeah.
How do we take it to the next level?
Well, I know Dr. Turner has his thoughts on that. You know, I mean, I think that it's a difficult thing to do. We have changing this whole paradigm of the way that we think of ourselves in relationship to the world is we're taking baby steps, but I think we're making some progress. I mean, my belief is that when I try to think of what our purpose is and whether there's any meaning to life, the only thing that's logical to me is that we use this physical existence in an effort to move towards the light. And I use light the same as I would use love. And maybe that is our sole purpose, you know, in being here. I don't know all that much about, you know, reincarnation. A lot of people have a lot of, you know, thoughts about that. But I think people are naturally, our nature by design is to be compassionate and loving. I think that gets sort of weeded out by our conditioning, our society, or sometimes our religions, or our education, you know, sometimes even science. So, you know, how do we do it? I think we just do it one step at a time, and you do what you can, not obviously in a religious sense, but just following our true nature of moving to the light and being compassionate. I mean, Jack, do you have your thoughts on that?
Well, yes. First, I'd like to thank Mr. Ernie Morgan from calling in from Rhode Island. He's a gentleman I met over 2 years ago on a chat site when I posed the question out of the blue, where is consciousness? And his response made me want to correspond with him more to find out his thinking. And as a result, Bob, you know, I've talked to this man, I would say, every day over the last 2 years, right? Not including many emails, as we've tried to find out what are we doing, where are we going, and why are we searching. So my thought to Mr. Morgan and to you about it is this. You mentioned 2 years ago that we're pretty much, if I can paraphrase, we're all links in the same chain, and we came from perhaps that same light, and we're all connected. Now, the thing is, how are we going to all wake up to realize this and to realize that in a way we're all brothers and sisters? And it's a good experiment to try to approach everybody you meet as your brother or sister and treat them like that, and you'd be amazed of what happens. I had a problem with my feet. The problem was a strange type of peripheral neuropathy in a way, a small nerve fiber thing, where I'm only comfortable wearing these rubber flip-flops that we wear in Hawaii. I'm fine with those. So I came across a lady named Linda Schreiber. She wrote a nice little book called Loved by the Light. And, you know, I think this might answer your question, Mr. Morgan, and your question too, Robert. What she says here, if I may just take a minute to paraphrase, to read what she wrote. She said, there may come a time in life when the questions we ask are not necessarily answered by traditional sources. Sources we normally turn to for enlightenment fail us. Our search for enlightenment is like the search for the Holy Grail, a metaphor for the interior journey. This is a journey of the soul in search of wisdom. It is a journey of renewal with the source from whence we came. Now, that part is, like you mentioned, Bob, that pinpoint of light. And she says the first phase of the quest begins when the soul hears this inner call. It is the time of the separation. Separation begins when we disassociate or become disillusioned. It is a time when there is a questioning of all that is known and loved. And I see that I kind of went through that as I wrote that small book. The book more or less was a story, a saga of what I went through. But then I reached what she calls the second phase of the quest begins, a time of training and transmutation of the soul. This is the journey, a time of testing and experiencing. Well, I've fit right on that when these last 2 years I met all of these people as a result of compiling a group of people who want to be part of a TV series tentatively called Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. And as we talk now, the producers, Australian producers, are working with U.S. producers to try to make this come to fruition. But here's the thing. The third phase, she calls the return. Bearing the cup of the grail, we are filled with love. We want to share what we have learned and how we feel with everyone. We want all who can to drink from our cup, the cup of love. This is now the quest of the cup bearer. And it's so interesting how 2 years ago we talked about love and unconditional love. And then as time passed, I meet people like Tom Campbell, who feels that love is the force that makes everything work. You know, I study all his work. I talk with him. I meet people who are talking about, you know, love is the thing. And the Dalai Lama, who talks about the stages of death that Tibetan monks practice every day, the eight stages of dying. You know, I'm starting to learn a little bit about how the brain interfaces with this consciousness and where we go when it's all over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at this point, if you don't mind, I'd like to mention a place that people can really go to find out the best information about survival. It's a website. It's www.aeces.info. And what that is the Association for Evaluation and Communication of Evidence for Survival. And the president is Miles Island, who wrote a great little book called The Survival Files. But there your listeners can go to find out the latest and the best about the near-death experience, because they're trying to collect the best cases. And I was fortunate to be asked to sit on the board of directors with a very distinguished company. I'm very honored for that. But the survival that we've talked about and all of that, we all are searching, we're all seeking, and at different times in our lives, we wake up to the fact that we've got to find out what is in next. You know, we can't just go blindly through this.
Yeah.
And it's happening now. As you look around the world, even though there are a lot of bad things going on, there are a lot of good things. People are starting to wake up and realize we are all linked in the same chain.
Yeah. Well, Ernie, I don't know if you're still with us, but I thank you for calling.
Yes, actually I am, and I just want to leave you with this. I just want to leave you with this. I talked with Jack, Dr. Turner, and we know exactly what each other thinks. I think, Bob, you touched on something, too, that I agree with completely, and that is, you know, my uncle would say, at the end of the day, we can be as philosophical as we want, and this is my point. But you got to get up in the morning, put your feet on the floor, and you've got to get through life. You've got to get through the hassle, the hustle, the bustle, the egos. You've got to get through all that. So my question, I hope you understand, is based on that premise of reality, in that we've got to put our feet on the floor, wake up. And I also think there's one other thing in play here, and that is that we need to learn more to rely on that intuitive guide that we have. We all feel it. You know, we all have it. We've experienced it in our lifetime. You walk in a room and you get that feeling in your stomach, not your head. You know, in this situation, your brain is reacting to your stomach, not the other way around. And, you know, Penny Pierce, you know, she talks a little bit about that metaphysical connection between, you know, your intuition and, you know, how that guides you. So I'm just saying that I guess my question was and is, and Jack pretty much answered it, is how do we, in a practical way, implement that by connecting all those things? Because as you said, Bob, everyone has different experiences in life. And how we interface with life, you know, there's 8 billion people. There's 8 billion different perceptions on this planet. So I guess I'm wondering what's the best way to try to answer that question.
Thank you for all in that search. You know, I spoke with Lynn McTaggart the other day, who writes about consciousness and the field and so forth. And her advice was really we need to look at the space in between things. You know, we have to change our focus. You know, when you're going to take an action, instead of focusing on your action, you have to focus on
what's that going to mean to the other person, you know? So, I mean, we all have to change the way that we think, and I think it's important, as you mentioned, to keep spreading the word about what you've learned and the evidence, and share experiences, because people ultimately, personal experience is the greatest denominator when it comes to believing in things that we can't see.
Mm. You know, trusting in that intuitive, that intuition too, I think, is an important part of it.
Right.
Again, thank you. You have a great show, and thank you, Dr. Turner, and everyone. I'm going to kick back and listen to the rest of the show.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think the answer is, you know, in realizing we're all the same, we're all one, and that when we wake up in the morning, we've got to give thanks that we have another day. We've got to really reach that point where each day is truly a gift. You know, to get to that point is one big step. And it took me a long time to realize that, you know, even though I was headed that way, but it really took time. And that full forgiveness, 100% forgiveness, that's critical. And as I mentioned, your show allowed me to do that because of that concept we discussed last time about the soul family and reincarnating to go through these lessons and how someone has to play the role of the bad guy.
Well, it's wonderful how we can all learn from each other. And we are talking with Dr. John Turner, the author of Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to learn a lot more about Dr. Turner's work. And stay with us. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. John Turner. This show is sponsored by the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show. They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on Forever Family Foundation. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. Then find your items in one of their over 900 stores, and a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle with five chances to win a one-hour medium reading is in full swing. Support our work with a $5 chance or five chances for $20 or even more. Please visit our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org for more information on entering the raffle or mail in your check to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York. The five mediums who have donated readings are Samara Angelay, Angelina Diana, Rebecca Ann Lowe Cicero, Stephanie Ann Stevens, and Neil Zapowski. Our annual conference, Is There Chocolate in the Afterlife?, with a feature Friday night fundraiser, Night of Mediums, is set for November 11th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in Hop Hog, New York. We have early bird pricing and special group rate hotel rooms. This is a limited seating conference and fundraiser, so book early to avoid disappointment. Again, at the website foreverfamilyfoundation.org, our key presenters are Dr. T. Lee Bauman, presenting Scientific Evidence of an Afterlife, and Lloyd Auerbach, who will be presenting Paranormal Phenomena and Implications of an Afterlife. And Holidays Past, an evening of spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums in three locations this year, all in December. December 3rd, Joanne Gerber will be in Bethel, Connecticut. December 10th, Angelina Diana will be in Natick, Massachusetts, with afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And December 17th, Teresa Caputo will be in Melville, New York. $25 a seat for members, $35 for non-members. Reserve now. These seats fill up quickly. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. John Turner, the author of Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations. You know, Dr. Turner, I understand that your professional and personal exploration are going to take you to Brazil. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
I certainly can. I was fortunate to meet a lady named Dr. Emma Bragdon, who has written a book about spiritism in Brazil and treatment and mental health. And what she has done, it's like a textbook. She had asked me to review the textbook because she's planning a trip of physicians to Brazil in this November. So at any rate, what happens as reviewing her textbook is completely mediums who are able to work with people like schizophrenics to develop their mediumistic abilities. and they have a cure rate of 95% with mental illness in Brazil. So the exciting part of that is that I'm going to be in Brazil with John of God for the last 10 days of the trip. And that's going to be extremely exciting because, as most of your listeners know, this gentleman has been doing this for 50 years with this group of 27, I think, entities that actually take over his body to make the diagnosis. And then as they're in this high spiritual environment, sitting in large groups of up to 100 in what's called the current, it's a tremendous healing session. So fortunately, each of us will have 5 sessions with this John of God. So it's an amazing opportunity. And so I think the whole thing with mediumistic treatment of mental illness is something that is going to spread and going to be a new paradigm for surgery and all kinds of things in the Western world. I think, Bob, you mentioned last time we talked that medicine was headed in a new direction as doctors are starting to realize that there's more to it than they're taught in medical school.
Well, yeah, and I think that you're a pioneer in that regard. When I read, I was quite amazed, that you invited, Joe Ray healers, into the operating arena, during the operation, because you recognized, certainly it couldn't do any harm, and as it turned out, there were benefits to it. So, I mean, I had never heard of a surgeon, incorporating that, and I guess you had a little bit of latitude because some of the beliefs in Hawaii are a little bit different than in other parts of the world.
Well, that's true, Bob, but, Dr. Oz also has, the cardiac surgeon has allowed Reiki healers into his operating room. In my case, I was the only one doing this in the operating room. I actually... as you recall, there's a picture of in my book of me doing Reiki after a head surgery, right? But it wasn't Reiki. It was something called Jorei, meaning uplifting of the spirit, another way of energy treatment using universal energy. So I think that everyone is learning that this energy is all around us, and it is free, that's for sure, and we just have to learn how to utilize it.
Yeah.
And again, Bob and Francie, I think that doctors, when they come to realize that they're in this not to make money, not to live high, lavish lifestyles, but to do the best they can for the patient. That's the key thing, to treat the patient like your brother or sister.
Yeah. You're the perfect person to ask this. And, I've read quite a bit about theories that various parts of the brain, may actually be designed to facilitate communication with unseen forces. I mean, I've heard about, pineal gland, the different lobes, temporal lobes, and so forth. I mean, have you come to believe that that there is an area in the brain that enables this communication? And
well, I don't know about communication as much as things like the split with the temporal lobe is called the Sylvian fissure, and in the right side of the brain, stimulation in this area does produce the out of the body type of experiences, right? And I think years ago in the 50s, Wilder Penfield was able to experiment on conscious patients as he looked for the site of seizure focus, but he was able to stimulate different areas and determine, what is the reaction and what happens. And again, if we look at the brain as a receiver of consciousness, and you remember when you had Dr. Moody on the show, perhaps he explained when his mother died, he and his sister were in attendance. And they had parts of the shared death experience happen to them. And they heard this heavenly-type music that the mother heard as she was dying. They both heard it. And, they weren't dying. They had healthy brains. But also, they talked about the shape of the room changing into an hourglass shape. Do you remember that?
Yes. It was morphing, yeah.
Well, here's what happens. These walls of the room you're in now, where and I'm in, they look like they do because the brain is keeping them that way in our consciousness. Those walls could suddenly morph, as you know, because it's all energy, right? But if that happened on a routine basis, we would be at a loss to proceed through these lessons of life. So everything is kept just as it has to be. And what I've come to learn is that this particular universe operates perfectly, that there are no mistakes. Everything happens for a reason. And the further we go along this path of trying to wake up, the easier it is to see what is the reason and not have to wait perhaps months or years or a next lifetime to see what that means. We begin to see right away the connection as these puzzle pieces just fall into place perfectly.
Mm. Do you think that we all have, you know, various different pathways, different options? You know, maybe there is some sort of predetermined course, but there are certainly options. I mean, do you think that we can change or alter the result by our free will?
You know, the man who called in, Mr. Morgan, he and I have argued this point for 2 years because. My side is that scientific evidence shows that we have very little free will. And in the appendix of my book, I mention experiments by Dr. Libet, L-I-B-E-T, in which he determined that we are about a third of a second behind our conscious awareness. In other words, signals can be picked up from the brain of actions that we have yet decided to do a third of a second before we say, okay, we're going to do such and such. Well, it doesn't completely take away free will because in his experiments he showed that there's a window, Bob, as you said, but it's small. It's a fifth of a second, 200 milliseconds, in which if we're on top of the problem, we can make a change in what is already happening. But I do think that everything we go through is predetermined and we have very little free will. That's why when these things happen that are sometimes very tragic things, rather than let them get us down, we've got to say, well, wait a minute, let us extract the lesson. What's the meaning of this? Because it happened for a reason. And I don't think we're able to make any change in that.
Mm. Do you think that it's possible, and I think you got into it in your book, when we talk about the mind as opposed to the brain, do you think it's possible that we all have different copies of our same mind that can exist simultaneously in different dimensions?
I wish I had an answer to that question. I just don't know. You know, it's possible that we're all tapped into the same collective consciousness and that what happens is downloaded to us and we're just like automatons. Mm-hmm. You know, an interesting movie about this is called Existenz, E-X-I-S-T-E-N-Z.
Oh, no,
and
sure.
It's about the fact that this life as we know it is similar to being in a video game. And if you approach someone a certain way, you're going to get a certain reaction from them, just like they're a video game character. So by approaching people positively and with a smile, and as if they are your brother or sister, well, then the results are going to be very positive, regardless of who it is.
I know you mentioned Dr. Moody before, and his book, was it Glimpses of Heaven?
Yeah, Glimpses of Eternity.
Eternity.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting to read because, you know, here's the guy that coined the term near-death experience, and now he's in a little bit of a different direction talking about these shared-death experiences. And from a scientific point of view, it's very evidential because, as you touched on, you know, you can't explain away these visions by the product of hallucinations by a dying brain, because the visitors, the people in the room with the person that's dying, they're perfectly healthy. But many of them, in some of the stories and that were presented in the book, you know, see various forms. You know, I guess you would say etheric bodies or spiritual bodies. Rise from the deceased. So do you think, obviously it's just an opinion, but do you think that we have these various bodies, our soul body, if you want to call it, and we're always communicating amongst the various bodies, the soul body, the etheric body, and a physical body?
Well, the Dalai Lama has a book called How to Practice and How to Lead a Meaningful Life. And he discusses those various bodies that you're talking about. So it'd be a good read. And also he discusses the way to practice dying, because there are 8 stages of death, the final one being what's called the stage of clear light. And he said he himself practices dying 6 times a day. And it's so interesting to hear him discuss these different etheric bodies and so forth. So, I'm sure you're right. There are all these kind of bodies, and there's a drawing in my book showing how these bodies connect, perhaps by that silver cord everyone's heard about and other types of connections.
Yeah.
But the thing is, all that I found, Bob, is so interesting, but it's more important, I've learned now at this stage of my life, to concentrate on the lessons that we learn every day, because trying to figure out how it works is almost an impossibility. We can only conjecture. One day, we will all know, will we not?
That's true, and we'll certainly have a different perspective on things, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We really can't go another 2 years without speaking with you. I mean, that's way too long, and there's so much information.
Thank you. I'm sorry the time went so fast, and I monopolized the conversation, but I've learned quite a bit through Forever Family Foundation, and I want to thank you for that and the fact that our loved ones are just a heartbeat away. That's a key point.
Well, we appreciate that, and you didn't monopolize, as Fran said, the conversation. That's what we wanted, because people, you have a lot of wisdom coming out of your mouth and of your mind. So thank you so much. Again, the book is Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations. It's a wonderful read, A Doctor's Journey Through the Worlds of the Divine, Intervention in Near-Death Experiences and Universal Energy. The website is johnlturner.com. I encourage you to...
Turner is spelled...
T-U-R-N-E-R, and johnlturner.com. We posted a YouTube in the announcement of the show, which is an interesting story from the book. So pick up the book. There is an Amazon link on our website to it. So thanks, Dr. Turner, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. My pleasure. Aloha.
Hello.
Aloha.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lockman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, and all the people still affected by that tsunami back in Japan. Now let us give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this: to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And that was by Matsuro Emoto back on May 9th, 2010, when we had the Gulf tragedy.
And remember that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.